Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe. Make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, Guru Nation. Welcome to, I believe this will be episode 249 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. I'm Dan Sfera. I've got a very special guest on. It's always my favorite when former students come on to share their success stories, right? Matter of fact, more of them need to, because once they get higher, they forget about me, Chris. I don't know if you know that, but you're not one of them. Thank you very much for not forgetting us small people. We're going to get into who you are, how you get started in research, or how you even got introduced to research, and then some of the exciting stuff that's been happening with you as far as your career development. So first of all, thank you very much, Chris, for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem. So thank you very much for having me.
Give us a background, who you are, you know, how your interest got, how you got exposed to clinical research. Was it random? Was it on accident like most people? Was it purposeful? Give us some background on, as far as who you are, your background, and then how you get started in research.
So I'm from Stamford, Connecticut. I just moved out here to San Diego since June. Love it so far.
Life is tough in San Diego. The weather is brutal. Tough. The weather is brutal.
Yeah. I'm sick of the rain all of a sudden right now. But I've got my undergrad in psychology, got my master's in neuroscience. I got into research mainly because it did happen by a little bit of chance and was for purpose. I had a construction management. I wanted to go into construction management to go in my father's company. Figured it that really wasn't for me. I didn't want to go into that. So I chose psychology only because I did like learning from people, like to learn about human behavior, but also like the research because I get to know more about other things. Knowledge is key in my principle, and I like to learn as much as I can. So research was very fun. It was very challenging also too. There's a lot of articles you got to go through, a lot of different protocols and everything that just to make do of like what you're trying to write down and find out. So got into research through psychology. Then I really amped up my research experience when I got into neuroscience, because that's when I developed my own type of research, because I want to learn about traumatic brain injuries and concussions with athletes and veterans. Cause that was my real passion. I'm a very big sports fan, big on protecting players, well-beings and lifestyle, and looking at the NFL nowadays and seeing how they, in my opinion, they're just not doing a good job in their concussion protocol. And I think there needs to be more research done, but it's hard to tell a multi-billion-dollar company to not play your most valuable players or something like that. So right. It's a challenging uphill.
They're at the point where they have to start looking into I think they already are looking into research and researching new helmets and things like that. But do you have a personal connection to TBI, to traumatic brain injury?
No, not really. I'm just a huge sports fan. I played football myself. I understand the type of conditions that can be put on your head and your brain. in that it can be hard. But I just want to protect the sport I love, and I don't want to see it go spiral down and cease to exist because we weren't aware of what we should be doing.
Okay. So you were doing your own research. Now, you're a PhD candidate, right?
No, I was going into the PhD candidacy because that was my goal. But after coming to San Diego and meeting with a few people from the PhD candidacy, I decided that really wasn't the right path for me. So then I wanted to go into more clinical research, learn about drug trials, how new drugs are developed, how subjects are brought in to help them, and more importantly, learn about the business of big pharma and all these different companies. And being in San Diego, this is a perfect hub for me to learn. So I wanted to be able to get into that type of research and learn more from a business aspect also.
Yeah, you're in the biotech hub. I mean, San Diego is like you can throw a rock and hit a biotech almost anywhere you are. It's a hotbed. Yeah. So then you did some searches. You found out about the CRA Academy. What were your experiences with the CRA Academy?
When I found the CRA Academy, I was really hoping to get a little more insight of how a clinical research associate works, what kind of background they need, and what they actually do. From the online course, it gives you a good crash course of what's going on, and it gives you step by step. Everyone was very helpful of teaching everyone if they had any questions or any problems they may have. Doing the weekly videos every week to have everyone in the class, like, all right, who needs like a question? Because it's hard to do everything online because you're not face to face and you're not in a classroom. That was very helpful, but mainly. The one thing that was the highlight of it is having that opportunity for that internship after the academy once you graduate and everything, because you get a hands-on experience of being part of a clinical research program, but you also get a hands-on experience of what you actually be doing in the near future, and you have an understanding of what it looks like instead of what's on a computer.
Yeah. So after the academy, you did the internship. I remember I was really impressed with you because you actually had experience, and you mentioned it when you were introducing yourself as far as doing your own research. I mean, you've written protocols?
I helped with one protocol at my first internship at Yale University.
Impressive.
We made like I was just like a backbone of the whole thing.
Doesn't
like,
matter. It's Yale, man, and you read protocols.
I maybe put one word in that protocol, and that's it. But still, it's good to get the experience.
But you learned the process, right? You learned like the process of how something goes from nothing to having a working protocol.
Mm-hmm. And I learned about the hardships and how just one thing can go completely wrong. It can just spiral out of control. Anything can just pop up, like just you can have 10 subjects one day and then all of a sudden 8 of them just say, I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't control that, but that's what happens when you're doing this kind of stuff. You can't control people's lives or anything.
Now, how did you, I'm curious, and I know a lot of the viewers watching, you know, you're an inspiration to them, whether you know it or not, you are. How did you get that internship with Yale? I mean, that doesn't just happen. Like, how did you do that?
So that was mainly by pure luck and by who you know. And it's sad to say, but when it comes to even getting a job or anything, it's all about who you know. Your experience helps, but knowing that one person inside helps a lot. So during my junior year of Roger Williams as an undergrad for psychology, one of my professors, friend of a friend, worked at Yale, and she was doing a study on smoking cessation and alcoholism, and that was one of the topics I was really interested at the time, and I was able to talk to her, and we started to hitch off a little bit, and she started liking me and said, hey, I got a 3-month internship that you want to try out for the summer? I'm like, absolutely. It's the experience of, one, being at a prestigious school like that, but also getting experience of how everything's run. And it went so well that the following year after I graduated, she gave me a 6-month internship to give me a little more duties about doing everything. Like, this time I had to call a subject. I had to screen them for the study. I had to assist them to medical appointments and everything. So I got a little more hands on, and if I just called Yale, like went back then and said, hey, can I have a job? They're probably going to say no, but I was lucky enough to find someone in there that gave me the shot, and it worked out.
Were you a student there?
At Yale? No.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I was a student at undergrad, and the person that I worked with was funded by Yale University as a behavioral laboratory for their studies.
Mm-hmm.
So she worked under Yale University, but she did like her own program of things.
Okay, so it's all about networking. I mean, is what I'm getting from this.
Networking is by far is the most important thing in the world. Even if for those people who are introverts or shy, sooner or later, you got to come out of your shell and you got to go walk up to that someone and say hello, because you never know what might happen. They'll probably say hello back and not be the end of it. They might say hello back and say, hey, you want a job right now because I like you? And that's how it works.
Are you naturally introvert? Are you extrovert or introvert?
I'm naturally extrovert. I'm very outgoing. I like to introduce people. I have my times where you're introvert when I do my work at times, but it's more important to network yourself out there and get to meet new people. So not every experience is going to be good, but no matter bad or good, you're going to get a good experience out of it, and you're going to learn a little bit about yourself and go from there. And I think that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah, and then one of the things, when I met you during the internship, first thing, I mean, Chris had kind of given me a prep on who you are and your background, because I find out from Chris, he meets the interns before I do, the way it works out with how we have our scheduling. And so he'll give me a background as to every student, because I'm always looking, you know, for the internship. It's not just like the fact that I have to do it. I'm looking for ways to help you guys, but also help ourselves with whatever projects we have going on at the time. And at the time, it's been kind of put on pause, but we had the CBD protocol mm-hmm. we were writing. Like literally the week that I met you, it was like number one on my to-do list. And I was like, this is the perfect guy. I mean, from what I heard from Chris, and then when I met Chris, you, the other Chris, I was like, hey man, you know, if you can help with the protocol, and I kind of gave you like an idea of where I wanted to go with it, and you just ran with it, and you gave me back a well-researched, I mean, take me through the process. What were you doing? What did I ask you to do? And then how did you come about putting it together, like in relatively short time?
So in the beginning, you asked me to get information and background about CBD research, pain therapy, how CBD research is going, the ins and outs of it. So I mainly just go about it whatever I did for research, also having that one category of that being CBD research and pain therapy. So going through websites and different browsers, you look up scientific articles, you go through each one, which title captures your main focus. And I mainly concentrated the paper to start off with, like, all right, let's start with the endocannabinoid system that's part of the human body that is triggered by CBD and THC. So you start with the basis of it about that. Then I went into the two receptors that are mentioned there, the cannabinoid receptor 1 and 2. What are they? What do they interact? Where are they found in the body? What happens when they're activated? And then we went into CBD and THC, because you can't mention CBD without mentioning THC, because the one thing I liked about this research too is that I got to learn a little more about it than usual. That's the key, and that's the best part. And I always thought like CBD was the miracle of drug of choice when it came to pain therapy, but I didn't know that a lot of companies like to integrate it or combine it with THC, because CBD has a very low affinity rating to the receptors, so it doesn't bind to it as well. Now THC, on the other hand, does. THC easily binds to receptors and activates them. However, with THC, you get the psychoactive effect or the high from it, which companies would like to avoid, because a lot of subjects or would not want to go through that if they don't favor that at all. But then you can realize that CBD counteracts that psychoactive effect, so it lowers it. So in the end, you get CBD and THC combined to each other. They both get THC combines to the receptor. CBD gets rid of the psychoactive effect of THC, and you get that pain relief effect of it. And every single research I found, there is always across the board, this reduces pain in therapy. Now, when it comes to like how long it does or efficiency, that's all different types. But the main goal you learn is that CBD research treatment can lower pain therapy. It can help with that, and it also gives very minimal side effects, which is very big too. I think the most recent adverse effect I found was CBD treatment was dizziness, dry mouth, and fatigue, and that was a very minimal adverse effect. No one's having a seizure or like right. or having freaking out or anything like that. So that's something I learned. I didn't know that, and that's what I enjoyed from this research also. And then after I found that, gave some examples, some results from other scientific articles, them saying all the same thing. This brought down the pain tolerance for subjects. They reported less pain, and then I gave my own conclusion of how to go about it.
And it's, I mean, you understand the process, but I want to give some nuggets for the viewers out there. Maybe they're not students. Maybe they're future students of mine. Maybe not. It doesn't matter. Anyone can do this. The other day I talked to somebody who's not a student, just random caller from YouTube, and she had an interview for an oncology CRA position the next day. So it was literally the night before her interview, she called me. And she asked me, she said, hey, you know, do you know anything about monitoring oncology? And I said, yeah. And she said, can you tell me a little bit about it? And I said, you know, that's like 5 hours. In fact, it's probably 2 years of time to figure that out. But it's not much different than regular monitoring. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And she said, you know, I have a feeling she was lying. But she said, oh, yeah, I do. I just, I wasn't sure if cancer's different. And I said, no, it's SDV, SDR, all the basics. And then she started asking me questions about the basics. And I was like, well, obviously, like, you don't know the basics. Do you know anything about cancer? And she said, no. She said, you know, how do you assess a tumor? How do you do these different kind of things? Which she wasn't articulating, but it's what I know she was trying to get at. And I'm saying all this because anybody can go on PubMed, which is where you went, right?
Yeah.
ClinicalTrials.gov has study results. I mean, those two websites, do you know any other ones? Those are the two I
even know. Google Scholars is very good too.
Okay.
Science Direct is very good, Nature. But there's a lot of websites that we have to pay for the article just to look at them. That's the biggest one. But PubMed and Google Scholars is by far my two favorites ones I use the most.
Yeah, I mean, I tell everyone, look, if you are getting an interview or you want to position yourself to come across in an interview as knowledgeable, at least have a working knowledge in that indication, and the person in this example I'm using it was cancer. I mean, rather than just calling somebody and hoping to get like a Cliff Notes, which is not going to happen. You
no.
can do what Chris did, right? You don't have to write an entire protocol, but it wouldn't hurt if you did, or at least the synopsis, or at least research the beginnings of setting up something. Look at past studies. If you have an interview for breast cancer, go look at breast cancer. Learn about triple negative. Learn about ER positive. Learn about immunotherapy. You can learn tons so that when you have the interview, you at least come across as somewhat knowledgeable about the therapeutic indication. And then, of course, you have to have the research fundamentals too. You need to combine both of those. So people are not willing to do the work, man, like you did. Like, you put in the time. Not only did you do the CRA Academy, but you put in the effort to learn about pain protocols and then CBD. And it's very specific, but I'm sure, and we haven't even gotten into your job interviews, did that come up in the interviews at all?
Which part?
Writing the protocol, researching for CBD, like those kind of things?
Yeah, actually today, the interview I went on today, they asked me about what I did for for as a medical writer slash intern of my CBD research and everything. And and I told them blatantly, like, I helped out with the basic of the protocol, but I basically gave them like the knowledge and know-how, the background of what they're researching and everything, because that's the most important part. So you want to learn breast cancer, if you read 10 scientific articles that are within the past five years, you will definitely walk in and know somewhat of a basics of like, what's breast cancer, what happens, what kind of treatments are working, what treatments are not. You're not going to be a PhD candidate, but you're going to be someone that's easily going to find it more knowledgeable than just Googling it, because there's a lot of sites that don't have that that guarantee of this being factual or anything like that. There's a lot of times where when I was in grad school, we had to go through article after article and deem it worthy of if it was actually truthful facts or not. And that was probably the most hardest part, but you learned a lot from it just by going with it. But yes, you got to put the time in. But that comes with anything you do.
Maybe that'll be the title for this video or podcast. How to gain a working knowledge on any therapeutic indication. I mean, mm-hmm. PubMed, Google Scholar, clinicaltrials.gov, study results. All right, do that for a week. Prepare for your interview. Right?
You'll be an expert in a week.
You will, and this is a way to hack. Like, this is a good way to hack. You don't need to go to med school to understand these things. When you're reading one of those articles, I'm sure when you were reading in preparation for our protocol, you came across things you didn't understand. You Google those things and figure out what it is. All of a sudden, you level up on your knowledge.
You start to connect the dots and everything, and that's probably the most tedious part of just when you come across something you don't know, you got to look it up and go about it. It's going to take a long time, but once you're actually done, you're going to have a road completed of what you know, and you'll be more clearly understanding of what's going on instead of just like looking at where, like, I don't know what that is. I'll just pass.
Exactly. I mean, and by the way, let me be clear here. Look, Chris wants to be a CRA. We're going to get into his job interviews right now. But yes, they're not looking for doctors to be CRAs. Like, you don't have to have the same knowledge as a physician. But if you are going to be a cancer monitor or a monitor for asthma or a monitor for schizophrenia, and you don't know what basic assessments are for that particular disease, like for schizophrenia, it's the PANSS, positive and negative symptoms of schizophrenia. For cancer, it's all kinds of stuff, right? It's the staging criteria. I mean, you need to know those things. So when they ask you in an interview, or maybe they even throw it out, and you say, I don't know what that is, well, then you have zero working knowledge on what they're asking you about. It doesn't go well. If you have at least a basic understanding, that's good enough from my experiences when you combine that with the foundation for clinical research background. So thank you for being an example there, Chris. I think so. Tell us about your job interview, the first one you got. You're already hired, right? You're working for somebody right now. We won't mention them, but you are working for a sponsor?
No, I'm working for a company in Delmar, I believe. But yeah, I just started there a couple of days ago, and for a position as a clinical trial administrator. So right now I'm working at the bottom and working my way up, which, like anything, you have to do at these times. And at the moment, I'm learning about a new software system called Viva Vault, which is a very
I know them very well. Yes.
Yep. That and how I've been just going through documents and make sure they're correct and cleaning them, make sure they go into the right file, and going about that. And my superior also told me, like, as time goes on, we're going to give you more duties, but we want you to master this first before we give you more loads and loads and loads on top of that. The other job, the other position that I just got back from an interview right now is for clinical data analysis, which is very similar to what I did as CDA when I worked for you, is how going through the assessments and plugging them into the EDC, making sure they're correct, make sure answering queries and everything like that. I think that's the reason why they liked me so much, is because I had a very familiar work experience with you to integrate with them. It's not the same title, but it's similar process and everything. And
yeah, they must have really liked you, because no one called me or anything for a reference.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
maybe it might be in a couple of days, but
usually when that really happens, it means that they already made up their mind.
For what? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like if they're unsure or they have a feeling, oh, maybe this person didn't actually do all this stuff he's saying, I'll receive a call. But in your case, I haven't received any.
All right, well, that's good. It might, maybe it'll happen in a couple of days. If not, that'll be good. Some good news.
Yeah, yeah. Congrats, man. That is really good. So right now you're a clinical trial administrator. I'm assuming for an organization similar to a CRO. Kind of similar to what DSCS does, but on a bigger scale. And then the data analyst is really cool too. You'll be a CRA in no time. I mean, just put in. Mm-hmm. Put in your work right now for 2019. By 2020, even before the year's over, you'll be a CRA. I'm predicting it now. Just keep going on the same trajectory, and you'll do it.
Yeah, I've talked to other people inside these companies who are CRAs, and they said, yeah, as long as you do the right work, you always try hard and you work hard, you'll get to where you want to be. And It's not going to happen overnight, but you do everything right, you'll be okay.
That's right.
And that's what I'm trying to go for.
Step by step, bird by bird. Any final advice for anyone out there watching, listening? You know, they may be saying to themselves, well, Chris is lucky, you know. People are always trying to avoid responsibility. They say, hey, you know, that's great what I heard, but Chris is lucky. What do you have to say to these people? Like, what advice do you have for people out there?
Well, for me in particular, when I moved out here to San Diego, it was very hard for me to find a job. It took me months, and every day it was just like, oh my God, it's not going to happen. It's not going to do this. Like, what's going on? And what everyone told me, and I always brushed it off because I didn't want to hear it, but it actually came true. Just be patient and it will come. But I think the most important thing is if you want to be noticed and you want people to call you for a job interview and everything, do whatever you can to get that experience, what you can. Even if it's for free or an internship, the experience what I had with you is the reason why I have a job right now. And that's what you need to do. That's mine. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We're in neighboring counties. I'm in Orange County. You're in San Diego County. I'm going to come down to San Diego. I come down there a lot, but the next like big thing I'm doing in San Diego is going to be bio in June. It's either bio or DIA. I can't remember. One of the big ones in June. So I'm going to be there. Would love to meet up with you if you have time. Anytime you're in Orange County, hit me up. We can go see an Angel game or something. Mike Trout is a $400 million man.
Yeah. Yeah. Who? Bryce Harper, who? Exactly.
I'm so glad we got him as an Angel fan. That's like, I love the fact that he's not going anywhere. But maybe we'll do a Padre game, Angel game, something like that one of these days when you have time.
I'll definitely come up for a Yankees and Angels game. How about that?
They play every year. So, yeah, those are always sellouts. We gotta plan that soon because all the Yankee fans in Orange County already bought those tickets.
I got to hop on that train then.
Yeah, you do. We'll do it, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. If people want to reach out to you, can they? Or should they not?
If they want to, sure.
Where do they go?
If they just go into LinkedIn and type in my name, if that would be easier. Or I think you have a site for me also, or whichever you think is.
Yeah. I'll find your LinkedIn profile. You're on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
I'll put the links underneath there. You don't want your home address out on the internet, man?
No.
Okay, we'll keep that off. All right. Thank you very much, Chris. Congrats. I mean, I know you probably don't believe it, but you are an inspiration to many. You should be getting like tons of LinkedIn people messaging you. Network. Keep networking. You're in a great area for that. Try to join SOCRA ACRP in the San Diego chapter, and just you're going to network with so many CRAs. You'll be a CRA in no time, and then who knows what the future holds for you after that. But I appreciate you taking the time out to do this. Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening, and we'll catch you all later. Bye-bye.
right. Dan, thank you.
So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, Dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.